Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is artist Jean Lightman. She paints in the Boston School tradition. We're going to ask her about that right now. Jean, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're the first Boston School artist I have ever talked to. I feel like it's a weird miss on my part, and I'm totally fascinated by what you do. But before we go on, can you please give out your website so people can go to it while they're listening to this interview and look at some examples of your work?
Oh, that would be a help, because it's hard to explain this without visuals. My website is Jean Lightman, my name, JeanLightman.com.
Now, as it says right on the website, and it's got really nice examples of your work.
You're a
painter in the Boston School tradition.
That's
now,
right.
Before we talk about how you got involved in that cult,
let's
talk about what the Boston School is. There was never a physical school, as you said
in your
Google presentation. What was it?
Right. So the Boston School tradition came about at the turn of the 20th century. A group of Boston painters, notably Edmund Tarbell, Frank Benson, Joseph DeCamp.
What about Sargent?
Sargent lived
earlier
in Europe and studied in Europe and certainly was an influence on these Boston painters.
All right.
But he wasn't considered a Boston school painter because he was really European. He lived in Europe most of his life. He did visit Boston, and he's one of my favorites. So anyway, these painters, though, went to Europe, traveled to Europe, as did a number of young Americans in the late 1800s, to study in the European academies, mostly in Paris. And there they learned the really accurate drawing of form. And when I say form, I'm talking about really the human figure and the roundness of the shapes of the form. They learned to accurately depict beautiful figures, but they also learned about aesthetic design, composition. That was extremely important in the academic tradition. And then they, over time, because at the same time in the late 1800s, this was the time when the French Impressionists were beginning to do their work, and they were influenced also by the vibrant color and light of the French Impressionists. So they combined those two. Some Impressionists kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater. They really stopped doing much drawing and weren't as interested in composition. But these Boston painters, they wanted to do both, and particularly in their outdoor work. They did interiors, and they did work outdoors. And their outdoor, we call it, landscape painting. There you can see really vibrant, loose brushwork with vibrant color.
Were they painting these plein air?
Yes.
Okay.
Always plein air. And that's the other thing about the Boston School. It's done from life. The paintings are done from life. You wouldn't see somebody just copying a photograph. It's because it's Impressionism. You're trying to get a sense of what the light is doing as it comes into your eyes before your brain gets involved and starts identifying objects.
Would you do things like Monet did, where you paint the same object over a course of a day, say, so that you would get different lighting effects?
So one of the frustrations of going outside and doing landscape painting is that light is constantly changing. So that wasn't a problem for Monet. He just had, probably dozens of canvases for different atmospheric effects. And he would he would pull out the canvas that best fit the light that he was working on. And so Royan Cathedral is a great example of the same facade, the same church facade painted in gray light and warm tones. And that was important also for the Boston School painters. They were very careful to depict the light as it was pouring over the scene. What was that light doing? Was it warm? Was it cool? Were there red, yellow, orange tones? Were there more blue, purpley tones? And That's extremely important and still is. And the wonderful thing about the Boston School tradition is it's been handed down now from teacher to student for over 100 years since those.
And this is what amazes me. I think this is what amazes me, Gene, is that there's a tradition. It reminds me of Japanese art traditions that are handed down from one generation to the next.
That's right. It's a lineage tradition. That's absolutely correct. It's one of the things I think that I love about it is that I feel like it's grounded in history. I'm a history buff myself, but I love the idea that each painter puts their own spin on what they do.
Yep.
But the foundation is the same, and the goal is the same. The one thing about Boston School, some paintings are more impressionistic than others. Some of the painters, if you look at some of these early painters, they painted very differently from one another. But they were all concerned with capturing the way that the light spilled over the scene. And they were all, the goal was unity or breadth. It's really important. They weren't getting hung up on little details and noodling up small little areas of a painting. They wanted to know how the whole big smash. You know, if you imagine you walk outside on a bright sunny day. You walk out of your house and maybe, there's some trees around, with bright sun hitting the tops of the trees against maybe a deep blue sky. And you get this, your eyes are just filled with these intense colors and something kind of hits you. And it's that initial glimpse. Well, that's that glimpse, that excitement, that magic, that whole scene. But seen in a glimpse, not in detail, but in a glimpse.
And you make this clear in the lecture that you gave at Google.
Yeah.
It's not photorealism.
Exactly.
Now, talk to me about the difference between what you're doing and photorealism.
So that's a really good point. So the photorealist, if you look at a photorealist painting, every square inch of that canvas is highly defined. Everything is seen in precision detail. Well, our eyes actually don't see that way. And particularly if you're painting in this tradition, what you try and do is you sort of disfocus your eyes. So what you really want to know is what's the most important, we call it the visual order, what's coming to your eye first? So if you blur your eyes, it's something anybody can do, if you sort of disfocus or blur your eyes, the areas that you're going to see most prominently are the most highly contrasted. So where the light and the shadow are the brightest against the darkest dark, that's what you're going to see. And usually, like if you look at a group of trees, the whole tree isn't usually going to be highly defined or contrasted. It's going to be parts of the tree.
Sure.
So you're not drawing whole trees. You're not drawing whole even people. What you're drawing is a shoulder where the light pours over the shoulder, and then maybe the neck dissolves into the background. That's what you're trying to capture. You're trying to capture the way that the light describes the object, but not the object itself. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. One thing I sort of want to clarify is you say you're painting realistically. But in fact, your painting is abstracted.
Exactly. And I'm really glad you said that, because it's really, and there's a whole discussion about it. It's not really realism.
No, it's not. It's
not realism.
No, it's, first of all, it's very painterly.
Exactly.
And so you have this look. It's the other thing that's about your paintings is they're timeless. Your paintings are. I couldn't figure out what century they'd be painted in, except that I know that technique goes to the late 1800s. But it's a very abstract, but not, a lot of people don't realize what abstraction is. It's not photorealism. It's not like if you took a photograph, a color photograph of what you painted. That's not what you're painting. You're painting that scene, that still life, through your brain, the way your brain notices it. And therefore, it's abstracted.
It's abstract patterns of lights and shadows. So sometimes the lights will merge together between two. If you have two objects side by side and the lights front and cross, sometimes the edges dissolve into one another. So you don't. It's actually a very careful study of edge relationships. So, say you've got a vase and you've got a cloth next to it, and the light's pouring across that, you know, that arrangement of vase and cloth. There might be a whole area of that cloth that just dissolves into the shadow, say, of the vase. That would be an area that's lost. But then there might be, you know, an edge of the cloth that's, or, you know, say, an edge of the vase that's against, say, a shadow of the cloth. Well, that would be a found edge. We call that lost and found. So it's the search for the abstraction, the abstract patterns of lights and shadows, and how some are found, some are precise, and some are lost, and they would be softer edges. And also, a wonderful thing about this is it's the sort of challenge of finding beautiful colors where the lights and shadows merge. We call them the middle tones. So it's the area between the highest light and the darkest dark. There are these middle tones, and in the middle tones are really gorgeous colors. It's just really a search for beautiful color and atmospheric light.
I love the way you're describing this, Jean. First of all, it sounds like you have your own terminology too. You have your own description of what you're supposed to be doing. I don't think there's another American art type that's like this, that follows a strict tradition like this.
You know, I don't know that much about other impressionism. It's in the American impressionism tradition, but yeah. I don't know of any that's been handed down.
Okay, we got to get to the root of how you got involved with this.
So,
I'm always fascinated by when people call them, at what point in people's lives that they call themselves artists. But let's take you back. Okay. Were you one of those children that always drew and painted?
Yeah, sadly, no. I mean, yes.
Okay.
I don't think I ever was sent to an art class when I was a kid.
So what happened? You got to tell me, like, okay, trace your evolution for me.
Well, it was something that I didn't know. My grandmother's painted. My mother was sent to art school against her will by my grandmother. So I mean, my mother never wanted to push me into anything. So I didn't know any professional painters. It was something that women sort of around me did as a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And I went off and wanted to have a career, and I actually went to graduate school in something totally different. And then
What was that in
regional planning. I got a master's degree in social policy planning.
I love this. Because I've had stories like this from other artists. I was going to become a doctor. And
right.
Suddenly, so what was that moment where suddenly right. you were derailed?
All right, well, I'll tell you the moment. So I was taking, in my 20s, I started drawing portraits. And I was decent at it. I could kind of get a likeness. And so I kind of gave it up during graduate school. And then after graduate school, I was working in Boston and in the welfare department and the policy planning department. Anyway. I was taking nighttime classes and weekend workshops in portrait. And, you know, it was something I thought, you know, it was a nice hobby. And then eventually I met somebody in one of the classes who told me about this exceptional painter. His name is Paul Ingridson.
Okay.
Who was teaching. And I got intrigued and I thought, well, you know, maybe I should look into this. And so I called him up and he was teaching at Fenway Studios in Back Bay.
Huh.
And that's this built in 1905. This, a you know, wonderful. It was built for artist studios, and a lot of these early Boston School painters had studios there. Anyway, he was teaching there, and I walked in, and this was the moment I walked in.
Wow!
And there were all these pedestals with casts, you know, plaster casts,
yep.
or you know, of Greek and Roman busts or statues, and they were all around this room with these student drawings. Charcoal drawings of these plaster casts, which looked deadly boring. But also in the room was a still life painting by an advanced student, and it was exquisite. It had this gorgeous color of just simple kitchen objects on a table, mm-hmm. and this beautiful feeling of light pouring across this setup. And I was totally entranced, and I thought, oh, my God, I could learn how to do this. And that was it. I said, I'm whatever it takes, I'm gonna it was the 30-minute drive, and I had a 2-year-old. I had to find daycare for her. It just, I mean, it seemed impossible, but I thought, I've got to learn how to do this. And I, you know, I was part-time for a very long time because I didn't, you know, I had a young child. And anyway, I studied with him almost 10 years, and it was an amazing journey. It was hard. It was very frustrating. A year and a half doing charcoal drawings, plaster casts, nearly, you know, it was hard. But anyway, the thing that was so amazing was that he was an incredible teacher and very generous with his knowledge. He's still teaching, by the way. So if people are interested in this, they should go to his website. It's Paul Ingbritson, spelled I-N-G-B-R-E-T-S-O-N. He's teaching up in Lawrence and is an amazing teacher. I mean, he's been doing this now for 4 decades, so he really knows what he's doing. He's perfected it. I mean, this whole point that you were making about abstraction, he's all over that. So he's teaching this actually much more loose way of approaching a painting than when we were students. But it was an incredible foundation.
Now, did he have a teacher that taught him?
Yes. So that's the other thing. So Paul's teacher, and this is a really interesting story, this tradition almost died out in the middle of the 20th century. And all but for a man named Ives Gamel, R.H. Ives Gamel, it would have died out completely. Gamel was a student of Joseph de Camp. William Paxton was a student of Joseph de Camp. Anyway, he was a student of those early Boston painters and also went to Europe to study, but by the time he went, they weren't really teaching this as well. But Gamel passed down this tradition to quite a number of young students in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. He died in 81. And Paul was one of those fortunate students who got this incredible education from Gamel.
At the point where you said that it was almost dying out, is the point where abstract expressionism and other types of American abstraction were really ruling the roost.
Exactly. And this was just ridiculed. I mean, people thought, why on earth? I mean, literally, some art schools were throwing casts in the river. We don't know if it was in New York or Boston.
Wow.
There's tale of, you know, taking those plaster casts and throwing them in the river. So literally throwing the baby out with the bathwater was what was going on.
It was action painters. They love action like that. So.
Right.
So this is so wild, Gene, the way you're describing this is like this, you know, besieged tradition that's just barely made it over.
I know.
It's amazing.
That's how we feel. I mean, it's, and now.
Well, I'll tell you, I looked at your work and I went, whoa, this, and for me, it was like, wow, this is really unusual. Then I went, but it's incredibly beautiful.
Thank you.
The color use and the portrayal of light is outstanding. And it took me a while to get used to it. It must have been like the person first looking at like Mondrian's work or something like that. I was like looking at your work like that going, wow. But it is, it's an amazing, first of all, you paint mostly flowers, like sometimes in a vase, sometimes mm-hmm. with some other things around. Mm-hmm. So they're classic still lives. And there's that whole tradition.
Right.
But your color use and your brush strokes are just amazing in this. Mm-hmm. And so you sort of get back to a very basic thing about painting, about color use, about you know, how heavy the impasto is, and the incredible timelessness of your subject.
Right.
It's amazing. I mean, you could put those paintings back in the late 1800s, and everybody would go, that's a really beautiful painting. And you work on that subject. Now, that's all that's on your website right now. Did you ever paint anything other than flower still lives?
I do. I just don't put them on my website. I have,
because you don't like that that much, or
no. I paint portraits, but I don't do them on commission. So I figured maybe I shouldn't put those on my website because I'm not really trying to sell. You know, to do portraits.
Are they done in the same style?
They are.
Okay.
And I love painting portraits, but also I love painting landscapes, and those are I'm a wannabe at that. I'm still.
I think painting landscape is one of the toughest things in the world.
It's very hard, and it's especially for a studio painter. It's very challenging to deal with all the changes that occur. I'm getting much better at it.
I don't think you ever master landscapes. I think people who have never tried painting don't realize a landscape is one of the most complicated, crazy things in the world.
Exactly. I'm still studying, learning. You know,
are you working only in oil? Are you working in oil paints?
I work in oil. I work some in pastel, but I work mostly in oil.
Have you ever worked in watercolor?
No. Watercolor, that was a medium. I think Sargent said it was for either rank beginners or really experienced painters. But it's the exact opposite of the way that we work. So here's the other thing about this painting. It's a search. You don't start out knowing all the answers. So you put down approximations to the color and the light with paint. But you're refining it, and the beauty of oil is you can go back over and over and refine and adjust and, you know, refine your shapes. Watercolor is a smash dash, and Sargent did it incredibly well. I look at it and I think,
I love Sargent's watercolors. I love his watercolors.
It's incredible. He knew, but he was so certain of exactly where those critical junctures of light and shadow were, and he was so quick with the brush, and I do know Boston School painters who do watercolor, but I'm not one.
Okay, are you using natural light?
All the time, yeah.
So you never use artificial light?
No, it's very hard for me to. The beauty of natural light is that, for one thing, the colors are true.
Okay.
I have a beautiful north light studio. I've got big high windows,
nice.
Which is sort of the aim. And the light is it's true color. So when I shine, people do have artificial lights, and they sometimes do work with artificial lights. I happen to love the softness of the shadows that pour across my studio from my natural highlight. And whenever I've tried to use artificial light, it just never quite. It doesn't give me the same effect. But it's frustrating because, say, on a day like today, it's pretty gray out. And I need to finish up a painting. I don't know that I'm going to have enough light to do that today. So that's frustrating. But, you know.
Well, you do paint things under cloudy skies, too, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I have,
but this one particular work you needs light.
You need light.
Okay.
So, you know, by 5. Well, now it's later. But, you know, in the wintertime, I'm done by 3:30, 4 o'clock latest.
Oh, God. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is artist Jean Lightman. She paints in the Boston School tradition. And you should check out her website. Give it out again, Jean.
It's Jean Lightman, JeanLightman.com.
Now, is there an association of you, the Boston School tradition painters, that you can, like, be a member of?
Yes. So the Guild of Boston Artists is a beautiful nonprofit art gallery on Newbury Street in Boston. The Guild, we call it the Guild, but it's the Guild of Boston Artists, it was formed in 1914 by the early Boston School painters there and a group of their students, and then other painters too, not just Boston School, but they were the main drivers of this gallery. And the Guild has a beautiful skylight in one of the, there are two parts of the Guild, there are two galleries, but one of them has almost a full room-size skylight so that the paintings can be viewed in natural light because the artist wanted them to be viewed in the light that they were painted in. And there are some 45 active members of the Guild. They're chosen for life because of their skill and artistic vision, and they represent a number of different traditions now, but many of the Boston School members are academically descended from the founders.
Wow.
But they're also American Luminists, beautiful American Luminist painters, Cape Ann painters that are extraordinary, tonalist painters, all kinds of a variety of different, it's hard to describe all of them, but people of all different types, doing all different types of work, but all representational. And it's the only nonprofit art gallery in the Boston area that's solely committed to traditional painting by living artists.
You were elected president in 2014. You were the first woman to be elected president of this organization.
I was. I'm the first woman president of this old institution, and it's a great joy. It's a huge honor. The Guild is very close to my heart, and I recommend it. I mean, you were talking about seeing this type of work. You walk in, and it's really a lot of it is museum-quality work in there.
Well, your work is definitely museum-quality.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I encourage listeners to go to your website and to see what we're actually talking about. I've got a curious question for you, Jean.
I want to say one more thing about the Guild. They also do classes for children, and that's wonderful. People should look that up. Look up the Guild, and they offer a lot of free educational programs. So one of the things are in the fall and the spring, usually on two Saturdays in the fall and two in the spring, free classes for kids, and it's great. Okay, sorry.
That's okay. I've got an interesting question.
Yeah.
The rest of the 20th century.
Right.
Going into the 21st.
Right.
Are there artists that don't relate to what you're doing at all, abstract artists or different, all the other postmodernists and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. Are there artists that you feel that they inspire you, maybe not to paint like that, but for, I mean, are there artists that appeal to you, I guess, is what I'm thinking about? Or are you definitely off abstraction, total abstraction?
Well, I certainly can't speak with any
talking about you.
I'm just talking
about you personally as just a matter of taste.
Yes. I mean, I see, for me, it's about design.
Okay.
And also about color patterns. So when I see a beautifully designed abstract painting with beautiful color relationships and I love that kind of work.
How about the fauves?
I really spend much more time on more sort of the painting that's sort of similar to what I do, but I wouldn't say that would be something that would greatly inspire.
Painters of the Dutch Republic from the 17th century, they did a lot of still lifes that were absolutely gorgeous. They didn't have the brushstroke quality or necessarily the light quality that your work has, but they're still beautiful work.
The Dutch painter that the Boston School emulates to a great extent is Vermeer.
Okay. All right.
He was a master. I mean,
that was
really
about
a master.
It's about light too.
About light and atmospheric unity, and he was experimenting in colors, particularly in his shadows. I think he was the first.
Gene
really used something other than brown in his shadows.
We're completely out of time. It's just run away with me, and I had so much more I wanted to talk to you about. I'm going to have you back. My guest tonight has been artist Jean Lightman. She paints in the Boston School tradition, and please go to her website and look at her examples. They're gorgeous. I love the blues. The blues really took me away. Jean, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much. This is a lot of fun.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.